Welcome back to the Midday Show. My guest today is Jonathan Gould, author and musician, I guess, too, right, Jonathan?
That's correct, yes.
That makes sense. First of all, I'm going to mention you have written a book on Talking Heads called Talking Heads and the New York Scene That Transformed Rock. And you will be in conversation with author Joe Hagan at Oblong Books later this week, Saturday, June 28th at 6 o'clock. That's the Oblong Books in Rhinebeck. Let me just read a little bit about the book. On the 50th anniversary of Talking Heads, acclaimed music biographer Jonathan Gould presents the long overdue definitive story of this singular band, capturing the gritty energy of 1970s New York City and showing how a group of art students brought fringe culture to rock's mainstream, forever changing the look and sound of popular music. And a little bit more about Jonathan. He is a writer and former professional musician, a contributing writer for The New Yorker. He is the author of Can't Buy Me Love, The Beatles, Britain and America, and Otis Redding, An Unfinished Life. You currently divide your time between some neighborhood south of here called Brooklyn and up here in Livingston, so you're a neighbor too. Welcome, Jonathan. Welcome to the Midday Show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Adam. And I will say that the actual title of the book is Burning Down the House. The subtitle is Talking Heads and the scene, New York scene that transformed rock.
Thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate it. How did you know to write a book about one of my favorite bands?
Needless to say, it's a bit of a long story, but it starts with the fact that the books that I write take me a long time to research and write. I put a lot of effort into it, and I want to pick subjects as a result that I feel pretty sure of. That is to say, artists whose work I feel pretty sure of. With the Beatles, that wasn't much of an issue, and with Otis Redding, that wasn't much of an issue. But I have pretty narrow tastes in popular music, or broad tastes, but I tend to dislike most of it and love a small percentage of it. And with Talking Heads, I was pretty sure that I was not going to get halfway through this thing and lose interest in what they had done. The other thing I'll say is there was a real arc to their career, and that interests me in general about artists. I'm interested in artists who go someplace with what they do, and that was certainly the case with Talking Heads.
I have to say they had a profound effect on me personally. I was narrower in my taste back in the early to mid 80s, but when a friend kind of pushed me to go see Stop Making Sense, it changed. I wouldn't say not only my feelings about Talking Heads, but it changed my life.
Wow.
Seeing that concert film directed by Jonathan Demme, but it changed my life. I subsequently saw it probably half a dozen times, dragging everybody I knew in. Oh, I didn't have to really drag, but encouraging everybody I knew to come and see it. And yeah, even my parents, who ended up seeing it at the time in Queens, and were dan my I remember my mom getting just dancing in the aisle. The people are doing that at Stop Making Sense screenings, by the way.
People were doing it at the most recent screenings of it. The film was re-released last year.
Yes, that's right.
Oddly enough, on the 39th anniversary, although they of
It's a nice
but
round number.
nice
Is
round number. I
it?
mean, they presented it as the 40th anniversary, but
Yeah.
the film actually, came out this year would be the 50th anniversary. It premiered in October of 1985. But at the screenings, that I attended anyway, people were dancing in the aisles too. I mean, to this day, in that sense.
Yeah.
And it's a masterpiece. There's no
It
other way
is.
to describe it. I think it's an acknowledged masterpiece, but I think it's lost none of its intensity, none of its brilliance. And the other thing that's extraordinary about it is there's very little about it that's anachronistic. You don't look at it and you don't think to yourself, boy, this really looks like the 80s or something like that. And that says something about the way they approached it and also what they represented at the time, which was something very distinctly modern. And it sort of stayed modern in that sense. And that's impressive. If you look at the Rolling Stones in 1976 or 1986, you say, oh boy, that really looks like a long time ago in
Yeah,
that sense.
right. Yes.
This is not the case with that film.
Do you think of Talking Heads as classic rock now?
Well, I guess it's become that, although there's an irony of that, which is that they tried so hard not to be that.
It
You
shows a
know,
better it sort of reflects better on the term than it does anything
yes.
else for me.
Yeah, I think
Oh, maybe
that's true.
classic rock has finally gotten to a point where, I mean, I don't even know what classic rock would be anymore if it includes Talking Heads. Honestly, what we play at the station, we're more likely to play here at KZE, we're more likely to play Talking Heads than a lot of what we refer to as classic rock. Now, I want to just mention Joe Hagan. He must be up here too.
Yes, he does. He lives in Tivoli.
That's right. Oh, he's in Tivoli. That makes sense. I remember he did a thing at Kotzbahn, the past winter or something like that. And I was meaning wanting to go, but I also can say that I read his book, Sticky Fingers, when it
It's
came out.
excellent.
So I'm almost hoping my these plans that I have fall through, so I can be at this event at Oblong Books on Saturday, the 28th.
Well, first of all, when I do events around books, I don't get to do them that often because it takes me a long time to write books. And when I do it, I prefer to have something other than me standing there reading a couple of passages from my book and answering a few questions in that sense. So I like, if possible, to have conversations with people about my work and their work. And in Joe's case, there's a particular sort of resonance to all of this because one of the themes of my book, I would say, is the role that the rock press played in promoting Talking Heads. I mean, they were absolute darlings of the rock press. And they were darlings of the rock press at a time when the rock press was coalescing in New York City, as never before. As symbolized by the fact that Rolling Stone magazine moved from San Francisco, moved from a warehouse in San Francisco to a very stylish building overlooking the Plaza Hotel in New York City at the end of 1975. And New York at that point, that sort of certified the idea that New York at that point was now the center of rock writing in America. And those rock writers who now had a sort of critical mass there were largely responsible for, quote unquote, the world, first them, and then the world discovering CBGBs and that whole downtown music scene. And so it's Joe is a perfect sort of conversation partner about this because he's expert on the subject of the dynamics of the rock press. The other thing I'll just point out is that while Talking Heads were darlings of the rock press, it wasn't until 1987 that they actually appeared on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And the reason for that, of course, is that who gets to be on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine is a totally commercial consideration. And it wasn't until then, in the aftermath of Stop Making Sense, that Talking Heads record sales place them in that category of Rolling Stone cover groups or cover stars in that way.
Amazing. Well, I'm going to encourage people to go out and see Joe and Jonathan in conversation at Oblong Books on Saturday, January 28th at 6 o'clock. That's the Rhinebeck branch. The name of the book again is Burning Down the House. Subtitle: Talking Heads and the New Scene That Transformed Rock. Jonathan, look, can we? I'm going to have to do a part two with you, I think.
I would be delighted.
Yeah, let's
As you
make
can
sure.
tell, I can go on about this. I wrote a whole book about it, after all.
I know, and it's a real it, for fans of Talking Heads, you're going to be delighted because this is a real substantial book, which is just so great. At least I think so. I love like a real, I don't know, well-researched, thorough, a substantial type book. It's really, summer reading for me,
Well, I hope
I
so.
don't need those. I don't
I
know
hope
these beach novels. To heck with
it's
that.
I mean, it's a long book, but I do my best to make it entertaining
Oh,
and to
I'm
make
sure.
the experience of it go fairly quickly in that sense.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the Midday Show today, Jonathan.
My pleasure, Adam.
So my last question for you, Jonathan, is I'm going to put you on the spot here. Maybe you've anticipated this in the past, but I was going to say, tell me your favorite, but that's ridiculous. So instead, why don't you select a Talking Head song and we'll toss to that after this.
Excellent. Okay. It's always difficult to do this because I love a lot of their music, and I hate favorite songs. I hate the concept of favorite songs.
Me too.
But for the sake of today, I'm going to pick Cross-Eyed and Painless.
All right, here we go. Talking Heads, Cross-Eyed and Painless, 98.1 KZE.